Today on COVID, Race, and Democracy.
There hasn't been a time in my life when Cicely Tyson hasn't been there, and I just assumed that she would always be there.
Because she can do it. And you say, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it.
What was so clear, she gave another clarity and an understanding. Who else could be Harriet Tubman outside of her?
Today, we reflect on African-American art and activism while looking back to examine our history and reclaiming our stories. We also pay tribute to a great one. Queen Mother, humanitarian, philanthropist, and actress, Miss Cicely Tyson.
She would give generously to the movement. She was a spokeswoman for our movement.
Dr. Daryl Michael Scott, former national president of ASALA, Association for the Study of African American Life and History, says the relevance of February goes back to 1926, when ASALA's visionary founder, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, first established Negro History Week. It encompasses the birthdays of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. By 1976, Black History Month became a national observance. Dr. Carter G. Woodson never confined Negro history to a week. His life's work and the mission of ASALA since its founding in 1915 represent a living testimony to the year-round and yearly study of African-American history. Dr. Julianne Malveau of WPFW pays tribute to Cicely Tyson, featuring history maker Dr. Jonetta Cole, 7th president of the National Council of Negro Women, author and anthropologist.
Tell me about your relationship and what she meant to you.
That would be a joy with a tinge of sadness, because the extraordinary, the incomparable Cicely Tyson has gone to glory. But the joy is in having known her before. She made the great transition at 96 years. She made her trip around the sun. I think the easiest way for me to describe my relationship is to say I could never call her Cicely Tyson. She was Miss Tyson. For many who had a close relationship with her, she was Miss T, because of the way she carried herself. If you wanted to see grace, if you wanted to see Black beauty, that was Miss T. What I feel most strongly about, Sister President, is that she lived her life. That meant her career, her daily activities, refusing to in any way belittle Black women. Look at the roles that she played. Look at how she would speak and carry herself. That's what made me just almost want to bow down. But surely I could at least call her Miss T.
She decided and determined that she would play roles with dignity, that she would not play prostitutes. You know, I mean, Black women for so long were just depicted in media, especially in film, as prostitutes and lowlifes, et cetera. And you never saw the more dignified part of us. She determined that she would not play those roles. Did that cost her?
Dearly. If you mean in terms of financial wealth, in terms of what, in quotes, honors she would get from the film industry, from television. But, you know, while she didn't get that stuff, look what she did have, her own sense of worth. I was just listening to you, dear Sister President, saying, what is normal? What should we accept? Well, let's take those very poignant comments that you made and say that Cicely Tyson refused to say It's normal that black women are prostitutes. It's normal that black women do not have a sense of dignity in the eyes of others. So yes, a cost in a certain sense, but when you can hold on to your own dignity, when you can make a contribution, as she did, to the civil rights struggle, to the women's rights struggle, then, you know, I think it's okay.
She literally was a star of every form of media that you can think about. And it's ironic that her biography that she just put out came out literally the same week that she made her transition. From her life and her return to theater so many times, I was so blessed to be able to see, what was the play, A Trip to Bountiful?
Yes.
It was a really great play,
yes.
And I was privileged to see it. What of her works resonate with you?
Well, I'm going to go first to The Trip to Bountiful. Miss T invited my hubby, who's a good friend of yours, she invited J.D. and me to see that Broadway play. You can imagine our excitement. Well, we anticipated that we would, you know, enjoy the play. No, we didn't enjoy the play. It just thrilled our soul. How do you make a difference by saying you love Miss Jane Pinkman over Sounder? Or you say, well, of all of the things she did, I like this the most. I never saw any of her work that I didn't feel I learned from and I was inspired by.
That sounds like Cicely Tyson. I called her when we had a Future PAC, was a Black Women's Political Action Committee. Now many have sprung up. But we asked her to do an ad. And she was so gracious and so willing to do it. She had a major role in the civil rights movement, always stepping up when she had the opportunity. Did she have a role with the National Council of Negro Women, which you lead?
Let me share what I learned from the Honorable Sister Alexis Herman. Alexis says that there was an unusually close relationship between Cicely Tyson and Dr. Dorothy Irene Height. And a part of it rested on the fact that the National Council of Negro Women had honored Cicely Tyson early in her career. And she never forgot that. She never, ever forgot it. What I think all of us need to remember is that, yes, she was an iconic actress. But we need to remember she was a civil rights and women's rights. Shall we call her a drum major? One of the relationships that we all know she had was with the colored girl. You know their name. You know their book. They were particularly close to Miss Tyson. She would give generously to the movement. She was a spokeswoman for our movement.
Dr. Cole, one of the things that really bothers me is that pre-COVID, we would be rousing up somebody's church and singing Miss Cicely Tyson's praises and reminiscing with each other about her. We can't do that anymore.
Mm.
What do you think is a fitting tribute to Cicely Tyson?
Oh, you just asked such meaningful questions. The first is, it's going to sound too materialistic, but the first is buy the book, because if you have a sense of Miss Tyson, you know that that would tickle her heart. For that book just to soar to a bestseller. It's on its way. You can't buy it in bookstores right now. But in addition to that, read the book. Don't just put it on a shelf. Read the book. Learn from her struggle. Be inspired by her artistry. That is the way we pay tribute.
That was history maker, first woman president of Spelman College, and former president of Bennett College, Dr. Janetta Cole. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's special national broadcast, COVID, Race, and Democracy. We now go to WBAI's veteran journalist and host, Imhotep Gary Bird. He speaks to the legendary Woody King Jr., founding director of the New Federal Theater in New York City, about Ms. Tyson's groundbreaking performances in theater and film.
We are remembering and celebrating Cecily Tyson for, as I heard someone say, everything that she gave. And joining us to, if you will, set the stage as we move into this Black History Month and acknowledge the power of the sister's contribution is Woody King Jr., legendary award-winning producer and founder of the New Federal Theater. An outstanding playwright as well. Woody's going to discuss with us the late Cecily Tyson, his personal memories, and the importance of her work. Brother Woody.
Good evening, Imhotep. Glad to be here. And I was shocked on Friday when I heard, I heard about it Thursday night, that she had passed early in the day on Thursday of last week. Because, you know, she's so private. And immediately I started pulling out recollections and reviews and things on her before I knew that you would be doing a tribute to her on WBAI. What I remember is my arrival in New York. And on my arrival in New York, the first time, I don't know if it was a visit or if I moved here, but I saw the Blacks off Broadway at the St. Mark's Playhouse. And she played a character called Virtue in Jean Genet's The Blacks. And the movement of her going up the stairs of a kind of ramp backwards, that stayed with me for years and years and years. And I said, oh, my God, who is this? And she was a Black woman like me. She's a dark-skinned woman like all of us who work in the theater and thought we could not make it. And that was in 1959 or 60. And she was just absolutely fabulous. And then I started following her career.
But in relationship to this particular moment, your perspective on her, seeing that you saw her before she did the TV and the film, you saw her the theater at the beginning. And that, yeah, at the stage. And you saw that dedication and the choice that she made to, if you will, use her career and her art as a platform.
You could tell she was well trained as an actress. And she had to be in her early 20s or early 30s. And she was on the stage with some brilliant people. And they were just excellent. So I am saying to you, Cecily Tyson had a stage career. And that stage career encompassed Danette Carroll and the Urban's Art Corps, and that stage career did not abate. She would come back to the stage periodically, but she was awesome, an awesome actress, brilliantly trained and by Paul Mann and Lloyd Richards and Morris Konarski. And I pulled out a play called A Place Without Twilight, one of the early plays that was done on Broadway. I think it was 61 or 62. It was done on Broadway, produced by Roger Stevens. And you know how those plays, all Black cast, and conceived and directed by a white writer, a white director, a white set designer, everybody white. And I said, wow, man, it's a published book. It's called Tiger, Tiger Burning Bright. And I hope some of your listeners may know that play. But in that play, Claudia McNeil, Ellen Holly, Diana Sands, Al Freeman Jr., Robert Hooks, and Cecily Tyson, Robert Macbeth on Broadway, Paul Barry on Broadway. And I said, oh, my God, why do I have these memories? Why do I have these memories? And I said, wow, because of Cecily and Diana Sands. And Cecily was just awesome. Awesome, you know, and again, the stage work, you know, A Hand is on the Gate, she did on Broadway. A Trip to Bountiful, she did on Broadway. The Gin Game she did on Broadway. Now, I do know her movies, you know, Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, Trip to Bountiful, Sounder, those kind of movies, you know, which later she won all kind of awards for doing. As she progressed and moved into playing mature roles, it was just fascinating. And again, it reiterated, reaffirmed most black people who work in the theater why we are doing it. It reaffirmed that. It made a put a stamp, an indelible stamp on our psychic, saying, hey, man, you're in the right profession. You know, you're in the right profession. Because she can do it. And you say, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. And so that is my recollection of her, though sadly, I am at a loss to read in the obituaries and at a loss when everybody is sending me material about her as if, you know, as if, wow, they tell me about the movies. And I, you know, I say, should I email them and say, I saw her at the beginning of her career, you know?
At the beginning. Wow.
I've been loving her since she started, you know?
Thank you for getting us started as we tell the story of Cecily Tyson to our brothers and sisters.
I'm just thrilled to talk about Cecily Tyson. All right. Thank you.
That was Woody King Jr., director and producer of Stage and Screen and godfather of black theater. Special thanks to WBAI's Imhotep Gary Bird. Kevin Powell, journalist, civil and human rights activist, shares the words to For Cecily Tyson, a poem he wrote after her transition.
Girls, women, black girls, black women especially, rarely told they are smart, gifted, beautiful, special, dope, all in a single relentless breath. But you are. Africa and the West Indies hatched you in Harlem when Langston and Zora penciled the blues and blackness in your diamond-slanted eyes. As Ma Rainey and Marcus Garvey swayed and screamed that little black girls like you are stars wherever they are. Not just the help, not just the mattress, not just the punching bag, not just the mammy, not just the pole watchers and pole dancers, but miracle chocolate goddesses who overcame and overcome human-made diseases like racism and sexual oppression to straighten and Afro-pick a world where you pose poetic and pretty-like for magazines, run miles and miles to rescue jazz kings from themselves, and spiritually anchor movies that make black folks sounder and sounder in them fields, on them buses, in them African villages, in them classrooms, through the violent and paranoid walls of history. You are history, Cecily Tyson. In your 96 years, you gave us to us the way our mamas gave us to us buttered grits or breadfruit and plantains on a Saturday morning. You gave us to us the way Harriet Tubman gave freedom back to a stolen people who did not know they were supposed to be free. You were our freedom. You were what freedom looks like when a little girl from Harlem, from anywhere, shaves her head bald, glues on eyelashes that tickle the sky's belly, squeezes her neck with jewelry from the motherland, stares quietly into a camera like the fearless queen she is. Fact checks anyone who thinks dark skin ain't the Lord's blessing, and sings the ancient and sacred words of a woman who done seen some things and is ready for her rest. I like me just as I am.
Kevin Powell is the author of 14 books, including his new work, When We Free the World. You can follow Kevin on Instagram.
If I'm in a crowd, if I'm alone, oh.
Mahalia Jackson, I'm going to live the life I see. Miss Cicely Tyson, affectionately called Miss T, was our family. Born December 19, 1924, she received numerous awards and nominations for her masterful roles on stage, screen, and film. She became a member of the Black Filmmakers Hall of Fame in 1977. She was chosen to be inducted into the Television Academy's Hall of Fame in 2020 and received honorary degrees from Clark Atlanta, Columbia, Howard, and Morehouse College, an all-male, historically Black college. The Cicely Tyson School of Performing and Fine Arts, a magnet school in East Orange, New Jersey, was named after her in 2009. Miss Tyson was awarded the President Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama in November 2016. In 2017, Hall of Fame inductee Shonda Rhimes presented Cicely Tyson with a Television Academy Hall of Fame Award.
Well, I guess I should speak to my mother first. She was very upset with me because I didn't go to college, but I want to let you know that I'm at an academy now. And I hope I made up for the disappointment. I want to thank God for keeping me here as long as I've been here to go to an academy. Okay. Moments like this render me speechless, I should say. Shonda, I don't know who you were talking about, but I'll accept it. Thank you for those incredible words. Those are the words that kept me going, that made me realize that I had made the right decision about my career. It's interesting to me that I had no idea where it was going, since I knew very little about show business. As children, we were not allowed to go to the movies, so I had no idea what it was that they were talking about. I learned, though. I had an experience while promoting Sounder. It took place in Philadelphia. And one of the journalists stood up and said, "Miss Tyson, I discovered a bit of prejudice in myself while watching the movie Sounder." When I asked what it was, he told me that he could not accept the fact that my son, the oldest one, referred to his father as Daddy. The confusion came about because my son was Black, his father was Black, and he called him Daddy. The reporter said the confusion and the discovery of his prejudice came about as a result of the fact that he could not understand nor accept the fact that this little Black boy was referring to his father, who was Black, as Daddy, because that's what his little white sons called him, and he was white. I can't remember that I was able to ingest that without finding it difficult to swallow. I became aware of the fact that there were some issues that I had to address. That was one. And that I would choose my career as my platform. I am extremely grateful that what I refer to as divine guidance led me to this experience and gave me the future of my career. I made up my mind. I just could not afford the luxury of being an actress. There were some issues I wanted to address, and as I said, I used my career as my platform. That it would bring me to a moment like this is nothing that I ever fathom. I just was doing what I felt was important for me to do. I wanted to say thank you to the Academy and the committee. I wish to extend my gratitude to you for selecting me for this important recognition. I've been getting a lot of awards lately. And I find myself wondering if you all know something that I don't know. And if you do, you better share it with me, okay? Because I will find a way to find out, okay? I have had an incredible career. I am grateful, not the shoulders that I stood on, but the backs that I laid on and stood on, while the women in our families picked the cotton with the babies strapped to their back. I'm grateful for them. I am super grateful that I have been here for 95 years. I have no idea who this person is. Do you understand that? I find myself looking in the mirror every now and then and saying, Cicely, do you believe this? I don't.
Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Heir of salvation, purchase of God, one of His Spirit, washed in His blood. This is my story. This is my song, praising my Savior all the day long. This is my story. This is my song, praising my Savior all the day long. Praising my Savior all the day long.
Takiya Hall, Blessed Assurance. Cicely Tyson's memoir, Just As I Am, was published on January 26, 2021. during an interview with Gayle King. When asked how she wanted to be remembered, Ms. Tyson said, "I've done my best. That's all." Cicely Tyson made her transition on January 28, 2021. We give thanks to her great spirit. Ashe.
You know, in addition to the movies, in addition to television and all that, how many times did Cicely Tyson appear on the cover of Jet or Ebony? I mean, she was a constant presence. Yeah, she was. And in terms of standards of beauty.
There hasn't been a time in my life when Cicely Tyson hasn't been there. And I just assumed that she would always be there. And when she passed the other day, it just so caught me off guard, because my universe, there's a hole in the universe now where Cicely was. She was my first screen mother, and it was always that way between us, like mother and son. Whenever I would see her, I would greet her deferentially, "Hello, mother," and she would give me that nod of approval, "Son." And that's just how it was with us, and not just me. I mean, I know she had a similar relationship with so many, countless legions, really, of others. And so there is a hole. There was a hole for all of us, for Black people, for white people, for those who love dignity, honor, justice, equality. There is a hole.
She had master classes. She would invite so many professional people to come to give master classes to our children.
I'll never forget calling her, letting her know I got Motown Musical. She screamed over the phone. She was like, "You know, you have it. I told you you have it."
The way that Ms. Tyson mingled with the students was truly amazing. She would come every year to the graduation.
Having her presence in this school alone was always inspiring, because I already knew who she was.
When you put someone's name on a school or a building, sometimes it's just ceremonial, right? But Cicely Tyson, she was here. She came to school. She was here. She touched us.
And after 25 years, I think about that. She always made you stand tall.
You just heard voices from around the country paying homage to Ms. Cicely Tyson, including Dr. Greg Carr and LeVar Burton, who came of age while watching her on stage, screen, and on magazine covers, along with students and faculty of the Cicely Tyson School of Performing and Fine Arts. She was a guiding force for the school and those who roamed its halls for 25 years. Students say Ms. Tyson is a beacon of hope that will continue to shine bright for generations to come. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's special national broadcast, COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm Akul Holt, longtime activist and host of Hard Knock Radio. Davey D of KPFA speaks to humanitarian filmmaker and actor Danny Glover about Ms. Tyson's role in shaping the identity of Black America in Hollywood and on stage.
The conversation about change happens on so many different labels, transformative change. Cicely Tyson is part of that conversation. I remember seeing her in Naked City as a young child. I remember seeing her extraordinary gift of engaging and being there and creating the possibility of new images with her presence was one element that was signature of Cicely Tyson. And I'm thinking about the emotional moment when seeing her presence on television as a child. There was no indication at that time that I would follow the same path in terms of career path that she has followed as well. But seeing that and the impact that it had on me, and it was unforgettable. Look at that generation, us, me, and others who post-World War II children, And we'll begin to see at a particular point, sometime after the end of the war, out of all the things that had happened over that period of time, the civil rights movement and the emergence of that, and to see Cicely Tyson there, in presence there, was a huge statement and validation.
Right.
She validated us in so many different ways. As I talked about it, she could be our mother, you know, she could be our grandmother. She could be our lover as well at some point. So when I saw her in Naked City as a child, man, in an early, this episodic, wonderful episodic series, this first time I saw James Earl Jones, and he was so powerful. It's almost like I was shaking. He was so powerful. She brought that same intensity and same honesty and clarity in her work as well.
Naked City, that precedes Julia and all those other series, right?
I think it did, because Julia was a episodic specifically for Diana Carroll. But this Naked City was a raw, that the kind of rawness that came into television, you know.
Right.
It had an edge to it.
You know,
and a certain edge that you often didn't see. And this is a television when the television, and most Americans didn't become a reality when they bought one in the late 40s, early 50s. So the emergence of television is a post-World War II phenomenon as well. And you can see it was that powerful. It's an instrument. It gave you that kind of, what you saw in film, often when you saw On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando or other films about New York, Naked City took that, I believe, in some sort of way and shaped that for television viewers as well. The kind of rawness of that.
In Naked City, this is where Cicely Tyson had her natural hair.
So that was
groundbreaking in itself. They often talk about that she brought that black aesthetic to the screen. Did you realize that at the time that you saw it, or was it something you appreciated later down the road?
It's appreciated because as a child, when I say child, a young teenager, at that particular, I saw Naked City, 1959, 1960, I think. Whenever I saw it, I was just amazed at how strong she was, you know, her presence was in that. I mean, this is that period of time when we'd have the new images, the new transformative images of African Americans. And, you know, we often know and understand, and you know that, Davey, a change comes, first of all, through people who on the ground, ordinary people.
Right.
To make a statement in their own real lives. And they precipitate the change that comes in the images that we see. Certainly the civil rights movement was a large part of that. After the Montgomery bus boycott, and you saw men and women and children and families and communities going through this transformation, not only protest, but it was transformative. It's images that you had not seen before of African Americans. And certainly at the advent of television and everything else, they brought something, their presence in real life was there. You had to complement that with the presence of faces and people like Cicely Tyson. Had to complement that. That had to be of service in identifying this new sense of purpose, this new sense of demand and clarity. And she represented that clarity.
How much was the pressure and the agitation of the civil rights movement, and even more so the black arts / black power movements, how intertwined or how aware was she of those pressures, knowing about them and feeling like, when I step on the stage, I got to represent, you know, I got to put it down, because it's not just about Cicely, it's about all these people that are, as you said, that were pushing for this change.
Well, I think that her space, she was on television. When we look back in time, these were theater actors. In New York, she came in New York. They began their process in theater. The stage became a part of that new instrument. We can think about that. This is all before NEC, Negro Ensemble Company. This is all before this. This is where you were finding what you saw in 1963, fans says 1963, Sir Laurence Olivier did a performance of Othello where he painted his face. He put color in his face. At the same time on Broadway, off Broadway, guess who else was doing a performance of Othello? James Earl Jones. At the same time that we had him, the big, major, iconic star, Sir Laurence Olivier, and on the other sense, you had this up-and-coming, it's an extraordinary actor and powerful stage actor. I remember looking at an Ebony magazine in 1960 at San Francisco Library one Saturday afternoon and discovering James Earl Jones. I never knew James Earl Jones. I didn't know that later on, he was also in Naked City giving one of the most powerful performances that I'd ever seen when his baby, his child, is bitten by a rat.
I've seen that. Yeah, that's incredible.
It was incredible. Here's what we have. The moment, historical moment, an opportunity created by that historical moment, and these key players who come on. You hadn't seen them before. You haven't seen them in the public space.
Right. Yeah,
they weren't maids. They weren't butlers. And you know, here you are. So when I say public space being television, being the moment that television captured people's imagination in another way.
Prime time.
It was a prime time. Yeah.
You just heard from Danny Glover. Thanks to Davey D of Hard Knock Radio, KPFA. Sam Collins, historian and certified tourism ambassador, shares good news about the Juneteenth Legacy Project on Galveston Island. They have commissioned a mural to tell the true story of Juneteenth.
June 19, 1865 is the day that the enslaved people of Texas found out through General Order No. 3 that the enslaved people of Texas would be free. General Gordon Granger arrived in Galveston with thousands of Union troops, which included United States colored troops, that helped to fight for their own freedom and the freedom of their family and loved ones. So this is an important date on the calendar because the former enslaved chose for themselves to celebrate June 19th, long before it was a law, state books, long before the 13th Amendment was ratified in December, because Abraham Lincoln had actually signed the 13th Amendment in February 1st, 1865, before he was assassinated. And then it was ratified in December. But when the enslaved people of Texas received the news through the five general orders, and General Order No. 3 being the one in which the former enslaved were told they were free, June 19th is that date in Galveston, Texas.
You've talked about the importance of the troops that arrived on the shores of Galveston. And the legend is General Gordon Granger read Emancipation Proclamation at Ashton Villa. Something else happened.
Yes, the romanticized part of the story is that Granger arrived in Galveston, took over the Ashton Villa residence, and came out on the balcony and made a public speech announcing to the enslaved people below that they were free. One of my grandmother's childhood friends has often told me the story, and this is part of our oral history that is so important, that her grandfather told her that it was not a piece of paper that freed them. And Miss Attorney Faye Williams is in her late 80s, almost 90, like my grandmother. So we're talking about her ancestors and her grandfather. Said that it was not the piece of paper that freed them, but it was the men with the guns. And he was referring to the black soldiers that arrived on the shores of Galveston. And when we look through historical records, newspaper articles from 1865, one of the mistakes that researchers sometimes make is we think about instant messaging and news today. But sometimes when you're doing historical research, you have to look for reports 2, 3, 4 weeks out from the actual event. And what you will find in July reports is that there was a telegram that went out from Galveston that said that Galveston is now occupied by colored troops here to enforce law and order. So it was so important to the person giving the report. He did not just say Union soldiers. He said Galveston is occupied by colored troops. It had to be many that was on the shores of Galveston. And when you check the records for soldiers that came into Texas, by January of 1866, 75% of the Union soldiers were colored troops. This is not something that is taught in our classroom. It's not taught to our children and to the children or adults. 75% of the Union soldiers in Texas at that time, 3 out of 4 were colored troops, would have been colored troops. They had been sent to Texas to secure the southern border, and after the issuance of General Order Number 3, spread the message that the war was over, stop what they're doing, allow the enslaved people to be free. And General Order 3 also includes the words absolute equality. And that is what we're still fighting for today, absolute equality.
Some very important history to note, especially during this time, the month of Black History, where we focus on and review, as the word Sankofa, we look back at the history of our ancestors in order to move forward. Moving forward, this is 2021. You're unveiling a mural on the island of Galveston. Tell us about that project.
Yes, the Juneteenth Legacy Project on June 19th, 2021, will unveil a massive art installation at the 2200 Strand intersection on the east side of the old Galveston Square building. Artist Reginald Adams and his team, the Creatives, will paint a mural that will include the United States Colored Troops, Esteban, who arrived shipwrecked in Galveston in 1528, an Olmec sculpture that will show the presence of Africans in the Americas prior to Columbus, Harriet Tubman, Abraham Lincoln, Gordon Granger, sitting at a table with United States colored troops standing around him as he issues the five orders. Some historical records don't even claim that Granger actually signed the order, but he gave the order for them to issue the five general orders. And there's no public record of him reading it, but after issuing the orders, he asked them to go out and post it throughout the town. This 5,000 square foot mural, which will be approximately 125 feet long and 40 feet tall, will be on display 365 days of the year. It is so important for us not just to focus on this history, and this is why public art is so important to communities, because memorials and monuments are on display every day. This marker will be at the site of where the Osterman Building was located, which was where the Union headquarters were located in 1865. The Osterman Building has been torn down. Then the next 2 to 3 months, it will be transformed into an outdoor classroom where we will also use augmented reality, where people can point their smartphone at the mural and learn the true history of what happened on Galveston Island and what happened from the Olmec sculptures all the way through the present, with a vision for the future, because at the end of the day, the bottom line is we're still fighting for absolute equality.
Sam Collins, the Juneteenth Legacy Project. Special thanks to NEA Cultural Center. Josh Barker of New York Amsterdam News talks to WBAI's producer and host of GRB, Imhotep Gary Berg, about Dr. Carter G. Woodson, author of The Miseducation of the Negro and founder of Negro History Week.
The New York Amsterdam News, as is its way, each and every year when we move towards this, does a very special piece in relationship to the work and themes of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. Joining us is our brother Josh Barker, Ace Amsterdam News reporter. Brother Josh.
There's a very interesting song, a very great jazz song from the 1970s by Herbert Laws, sung by his daughter Deborah Laws, called Family. And it's actually one of my favorite songs, and that's what this Black History theme is about.
Family, that's what people really are. Family, faces, places near and far.
song. It's a theme for this month, and that's what this is all about. And so the ASALA, which is the Association for African American Studies and Life, you know, announces a theme every year. That organization was founded by Carter G. Woodson, who started Black History Week, which eventually evolved into what we have today, Black History Month. And so when we talk about the Black family, you know, throughout history, there have been various societal impacts that have had a negative effect on Black families, all the way back going to slavery when families were torn apart, to today with the high number of incarceration of our brothers and sisters, which are being taken out of the home at disproportionate rates. And so, you know, we're also going to be discussing genealogy. You know, unfortunately for a lot of our brothers and sisters, you know, we don't have the resources to really go back and see. You know, we have Ancestry and 23andMe and all those other things to really go back and see where we come from in Africa. But not many of us are able to trace all the way back to see where our families were enslaved at, where they were, who they were, because a lot of that history was erased against our own free will. So we're going to be talking about that all this month. You know, so many families have changed the lives of Black America, you know, from the Sharpton family to Sylvia Woodson's family to the King family. And we're going to be talking about that historic, most historical impacts as well. So this month, it is all about family.
Josh Barker, Amsterdam News, New York. Thanks to WBAI's Imhotep Gary Berg. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's special national broadcast, COVID, Race, and Democracy.
Pass the information, extend the knowledge.
John Coltrane said, "I love Supreme." I interpret that to all living. Donny Hathaway said, "The ghetto." Woody Shaw said, "Why?" John F. Kennedy said, "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country."
Pass the information, extend the knowledge.
Martin Luther King said, "I have a dream." Stevie Wonder said, "Inner vision, interpretation, watch with your ears." Aretha Franklin said, "Respect." Barry White said, "Love." Nina Simone said, "To be young, gay, and black." James Brown said, "Stay in school." Panama Allen said, "Sometimes we're not prepared for adversity. Mercy, mercy."
This concludes our Black History Month edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of the Pacifica stations and affiliates who have made contributions to this broadcast. Special thanks to the Pacifica COVID Task Force. You can find this and all previous episodes on our website, along with today's playlist at covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Today's show was produced by yours truly, Akul Holt, and co-produced by Fahima Sek. Edited by Lona Alliance, Akul Holt, and Paulina Vasiliev. Executive producers are Steve Zeltzer, Paulina Vasiliev, and Akul Holt. Special thanks to producers David D., Imhotep Gary Berg, Dr. Julianne Malveaux, and Paulina Vasiliev for contributing to the show. I'm Akul Holt. Thanks for listening. I leave you with this quote. Real education means to inspire people to live more abundantly, to learn to begin with life as they find it and make it better. Dr. Carter G. Woodson, The Miseducation of the Negro.